This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Mike Lynch.
What's going on? This is Rashad.
This is the Sports Sunday Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. It is now brought to you on the Fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Centers.
Doing the right thing since 1952.
Weekend sports with a difference.
Yeah, I really shouldn't be drinking.
Oh, really? You learned that in med school? That you obviously didn't get into?
A look at the weekend in sports with the inside story on the Blazers, the Ducks, and the Beavers. This is Sports Sunday with Mike Lynch.
At least I have my own bed.
Your bed is a car.
Yeah, but it's a sweet car.
And Rashad Taylor.
He's a very gifted singer.
I'm really, really good.
How good?
I've been called the songbird of my generation.
Stop.
Of people who've heard me. That good.
On 1080, The Fan.
Hey, good morning, Portland, Oregon. Well, fair morning, I should say, man, just because for us here at The Fan, the morning didn't start on an awesome note. Number one, man, Lynch is gone. Lynch is in BC, I think, or maybe he just got back from Canada with his lovely wife's parents, and you know, I think his parents might have gone as well. I'm not exactly sure, but I know he's gone. And usually he's the one that lets me know, hey man, there's some stuff going on, you know, right here on the street right before you turn to the Fan. So just be prepared, just kind of get here a little early or something like that. So apparently the PDX pedal?
The Portland Bridge pedal.
The Portland Bridge pedal is happening, and I was a little late and a little frustrated. Number one, because we have a guest joining us, and I didn't want him to be in a situation to where, man, maybe he was late on his first day. So I called my guy, Tyler Lively. How you doing, my dude?
I'm good, my friend.
Man, great to see you, man. So I had to hit you early just to make sure that, hey, bro, there's some stuff going on the bridge. I'm not exactly sure what, but it's, you know, kind of causing a little bit of additional traffic, man. So they weren't letting me over. I got here initially, and the police officer, and it happens every year. And I don't know why we end up frustrated, because we know they're going to, you know, not let us through. But every single year they do this, and we're like, hey, I work right there at Intercom, right there at the Fan. Can you let us through? And the police officer was not hearing anything I was saying and told me to kind of keep it moving. So that got me stuck in traffic for about 15 additional minutes, but going, you know, nowhere, trying to go straight, trying to find a place to turn. Finally found a place to turn and got here pretty quick. But the whole waiting part is initially pretty bad.
I got over in probably 3 minutes. I rolled the window down and I was like, sir, I've got to be on the radio. And he's like, all right. And he literally stopped the bikers.
Jesse, did that happen for you?
Let's see here. First police officer that I was like, hey, bro, if I don't get there, like, station's going off air. He's like, whoa, I don't have to let you through. And then it was like, I'm sorry. And he's like, no. And I was like, okay. And this is down on NATO, because I'm trying to get in off of NATO through the back way into the Southwest, because apparently the bikers in this city are so important. We're going to just literally cut off an entire section of our city for them that people live in and work in and can't get to, so people can ride their bikers
are
bridges.
The bikers are incredibly important.
So, yeah, the next cop
they built
a
whole bridge for the bikers, actually, here in Portland. You know, and it's not far from where we are right here at the Fan. There's a whole bridge that's right over there that's just built for the bikers
for
and the walkers
bikes. And so they got
the MAX train
all over the other bridges and everything. And the second cop made me drive all the way back around, and that's where it turned into this big cluster of cars that weren't going anywhere. And so it took me another 20 minutes to go all the way back around so I can sit in the intersection and hold up everybody, because they wouldn't let me through again, even though he said he'd let me through. So it took another 5 minutes of just nobody going anywhere, because I was like, I got to get through. So I apologize for anybody who might have been behind me, but the station was literally going to go off air. So, and sorry about the kind of short update as well.
No, man, you know, it happens. To be real, there's not a whole lot of stuff going, you know, going on. There is, but it's not, you know, it's just kind of one of those things. But luckily, I'm not doing the show on my own. Again, my guy, Mr. Tyler Lively from National Scouting Report, man, he decided to come in and hang out. Now, mind you, we're like mutual friends. Like, I mean, yeah. I know we've met a few times, but yeah. It was one of those things like, man, you know, some of the homies that I know, and they kind of decided, man, we should link at some point, man. So I'm excited for you to be able to come in and do this for a little bit. The last time I actually saw you was at the Hoop Summit.
Yep.
And I got a beer that I couldn't necessarily drink because I was still on air. And it was like, I was looking at it the entire time, and it looked awesome. And I wanted to go ahead and knock that down. But I kind of had to wait till after the show, so I never actually got to tell you, man, thank you for the beer.
I was buying one. Figured you would want one. So.
Absolutely, I would want one. But it was crazy because Swag kind of looked at me like, you know, you're not going to drink that on the air. I was like, well, obviously I'm not going to drink it now, Swag. But I looked at it, and I couldn't wait. As soon as the game was over, that was down pretty quickly.
He even looked at me funny. He's like, "What are you doing?"
No, I could totally imagine, man. So shout out to my guy Swag, but man, I appreciate you coming on, man. I wanted to ask a couple questions. So
yeah,
you know, we talk a lot, really, when you and I have interactions on social media. You know, it's typically over. At first, it was like, you know, high school sports and talking about certain guys, certain kids that get, you know, kind of recruited from here in town. We're going to talk a little bit about Oregon and Oregon State, you know, here within the hour. But I wanted to ask, man, I've always been so curious, especially over the last little bit. We've seen a lot of our state schools kind of go the opposite route as far as recruiting their in-state kids. Like, so you look at schools like U of O and Oregon State, and you don't see very many offers for the kids here in Oregon that are, you know, end up being first team, second team, some of those things like that. Is there a certain stigma about kids that come from Portland, specifically if you come from north, northeast, kind of southeast Portland, about, you know, being recruited and playing for one of these kind of national, I don't call them powers because that's not what Oregon State is now, but still one of the blue bloods, especially in Pac-12.
I don't know if there's a stigma to it, but I think there's definitely a level that of play, and especially in the PIO when it comes to football specifically. Where it's not on par with the Clackamases, the Lake Oswegos, the Tualatins, Tigards, basically any school in the suburbs, and also just the amount of eyeballs that are on PIL schools, completely different than when you get out of the tent.
Well, it's weird because, you know, not even just talking like PIL, you know, there were certain guys that have played for Clackamas and played for certain schools that, man, damn, he's not getting recruited by Oregon State and he's not being recruited by, you know, U of O, at the very least, by, you know, by the Vikings. So it just seems kind of weird. I'm just curious if maybe coaches honestly think that kids from California and Washington are just flat out better than the kids here in Oregon.
Personally, with my own eyeballs, they are better. Now, not all of them. There's a handful of athletes that are phenomenal here. But a lot of times what I've run into doing my scouting and things like that is there's a lot of parents that have no idea how to go about getting their kid recruited, let alone getting an NCAA number.
Yeah, that's so key. It basically is on the coaches to get your kids there. And then by the time you get there, like at the high school level, you're almost a little bit too little too late in that respect. And it really is about kind of, you really have that vision for your kid. You need to start them in middle school, or even, I mean, depending on the sport, earlier than that. I know I played more obscure sports and it still was too little too late by the time I found the path, because I relied too much on my high school coaches to show me the path, where in reality that's not what their job was. Their job was to just win games for the high school, not to get you where you wanted to go.
I mean, if you rely just solely on the coaching and maybe some of the parents to help you out, that's going to be tough, because some of the parents are going to look out for their own children, and the coaches can't do all 50 some odd players on a football team. And let's be honest, not all 50 are going to make it to the next level. So
No. And that's why I'm always so curious, you know, just because I played for really good football teams in high school. I played for teams that were awful, you know, while I was in high school. And the one difference I can always tell is coaching. you know, when you have a great coach, things are a little bit different for you. They can take talented players and make them great players, and great players make them phenomenal players. And that kind of happens. So nowadays, you know, we live in this day where a lot of kids are almost kind of on like an AAU circuit to where they can play 7-on-7 and do some other things and kind of get their names out there. Is coaching still the top priority in successful high school football here?
I think coaching in general, whether it's basketball or football, you look at it and...
Because you can win with talented players and not have 100%. Great coaching.
Yeah, 100%. But there's times where you have those fringe players where, like, all right, just a little extra coaching, they're over the top, and then they're playing, say, a Portland State or a Western, but that extra coaching isn't there. And so you're just watching wasted talent, and you can see it in the athlete's face and their mannerisms. So like, hey, man, I'm good, and I'm good enough, and I want to learn, but... We're a run first offense, and I'm a 6'4" receiver that can run a 4.4. Throw me the ball. Oh, we're running it again. Cool.
So. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially in high school, where you'll see teams literally they're still running the wishbone, the 3-back sets, and you're right. You see him out there, the 6'6" receiver. And you're just like, holy crap, that kid. He's just got all the physical tools, but that's not part of the game plan. And when you think about the high school level, you're wondering, who are these coaches, right? There's very few of these schools actually have true, real coaches that can maturate players from a freshman to a senior. Most of these schools, they're just guys, right? There's a lot of guys at these schools. Not very many of them have the ability to bring back high-profile players that played at high levels in college and in the NFL. There are a few in the state, but that's few far between. I know, you know, like the teams where the talent prevailed, those teams are teams typically where they're not very good. They get a good quarterback, maybe a good running back that came up together and through middle school and high school, and they're good for a year or two. And then they're back to not being good because the coaching isn't there. That's a talent thing. And that is the issue, I think, in Portland is every time I looked around at a lot of these schools, I was wondering, who are these coaches and do they have any business being like teaching the game of football? But where are you supposed to get them at the high school level from? Because I think most of them, they are going to these AAU levels and they're finding other ways, avenues to get to bigger, better places than coaching at the high school level.
Well, speaking of some bigger, better places, a couple of our in-state schools have a few big games that are coming up here in just a few, or a couple big games that are coming up here in just a couple weeks, from a school that recruits well to a school that hasn't recruited as well over the past little bit. But we'll talk about their prospects coming up next right here on The Fan.
Weekends were made for sports. This is Sports Sunday with Mike and Rashad on 1080 The Fan.
9:17 on your Sunday morning. First, I gotta say this too. Man, happy birthday to my beautiful mom. I'm not gonna tell everyone how old she is, but it's up there. And today I'm pretty sure she's just chilling right now. She's probably getting ready for church with my sister. So, mom, if you're listening, which I'm almost positive you're not, happy birthday, and I hope you have an awesome, awesome day. And shout out to anybody else that has a birthday. Shout out to all the Leos out there. You're stubborn, but we love you anyway. You know what I mean? So, what's your sign, Tyler?
I'm a Taurus.
Highest of fives. When's your birthday?
May 2nd.
May 5th, May 6th. There it is,
look,
man.
Let's go.
Taurus has run the special Taurus edition of Sports Sunday. But we are officially 3 weeks away from actual football starting. College football starts in 3 weeks, and you know, here in the state of Oregon, we're starting off with the bang. Oregon State will take on Oklahoma State.
Yikes!
And the University of Oregon will take on Auburn. And what's kind of become a bit of a, I don't want to call it a rivalry because one side actually has to win a couple games to make it a rivalry, but it's become a really intriguing kind of storyline between these two teams. But we're going to go ahead and start with Oregon State because everybody thinks we hate Oregon State. That's not the truth. We have a lot of love for the Beavers. It's just that when you're you're little brother right now. You've been little brother for a little bit. Oregon went through its slump where they won, you know, 4 games and 5 games, and now they're at a point to where they're winning 8, possibly winning the Pac-12 this year. But Oregon State just hasn't been able to pick it up, you know, really since, well, I would say it was well before Gary Anderson, you know, kind of stepped in. I think Gary Anderson came, and here's this kind of big name coach from a big name program who's going to come into Corvallis and turn things around. And, you know, what's the fart sound they use on primetime all the time? That's what it was for Gary Anderson and the Beavs. And Jonathan Smith, he's came in, and it looks like he said all the right things. Last year, the Beavers weren't awesome. They went 2-10 last year. But still, there was this overall optimism from a lot of Beaver fans. The year prior to that, I think they won 3 games, and still there was this. They won one game. So at least 2 games is an improvement if you're going to go like that. But yeah, and still, there's been this overall optimism from a lot of Beaver fans that I met. When I was at the Winco Foods Open, I met so many Beaver fans that were asking about Oregon State football and how we think they're going to do. And a lot of them weren't super excited with the overall answers. However, I think a lot of us think that the Beavers are going to be good at some point. It sounds like Jonathan Smith is trying to do all the right things. And once they get new facilities, maybe things will be different. But as far as this game against Oklahoma State, who by all accounts is a let's call them a middle of the road Big 12 team. Can we do that? Is that fair?
That's fair.
To kind of say that? Middle of the road Big 12 team.
That's fair.
Oregon State has a huge opportunity to eke out a big win to start their season. Do you think that Oregon State has any chance of beating Oklahoma State? I believe the game is in Corvallis too.
Yeah. In my opinion, no. They'll be able to compete during warmups. I mean, that'll be a good watch. Once the ball's kicked off, though, it's going to be over quickly.
I don't know if it'll be over quickly. Oregon State has a tendency to kind of try to hang in games for a little bit. You remember that Ohio State game for a little bit, they hung in there, and then they just blew it out of the water within like the middle of the second quarter. So they tried to make it interesting. And the one thing I can say about Oregon State last year, they were able to move the ball at points. It wasn't, now mind you, they didn't win any games or win a lot of games doing it, but when they were able to move the ball, you saw that, okay, this could be something. Moving forward, you might have a little bit of juice there in your offense. So can they sustain it? Because towards the end of the season, they kind of fell off, but at the beginning of the season, they were putting up, you know, close to 30 points a game. Now, mind you, the teams they were playing were putting up much more, but they were still, you know, putting up pretty decent numbers for the Beavers. In your opinion, what do you think the Beavs got to do to, you know, make a splash in the year?
Play defense, 100%. They have to play defense. Their offense is going to be good. They got Jamar Jefferson. He's fantastic. I got questions at quarterback. I'm not sold on Luton at all. But who knows? He could surprise everybody. But if they can tackle, I think they could be serviceable and maybe pull out a 500 season. That's a stretch, but if they can play defense, their offense will keep them in it.
Ooh, 500 seasons. Okay, so to go 500, that means they have, let's see. That's a huge take. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, 12 games on the season. So that would mean, we can go through the schedule. They're going to play Oklahoma State. I think we can both agree that they'll probably lose that game.
Correct.
They'll be at Hawaii, which is kind of a toss-up because Hawaii is one of those, you know, one of those teams that nobody really expects them to do anything, but every now and then they'll eke out a win.
Right.
But I'll say they beat Hawaii.
Okay.
I'll say they go two in a row and they beat Cal Poly.
If they don't, well,
no,
there goes
that's,
the season.
That's the season. That will tell you everything you know about the remainder of the season if they don't beat Cal Poly on September 14th. Then they'll play Stanford, which will be a loss. They'll play UCLA, which will be a loss. They'll play Utah, which will be a loss. Cal, which will probably be a loss. Arizona, which... That one is in Tucson, so that we can go ahead and...
I'm not going to write UCLA into the win column on that one.
Think Chip Kelly and company is ready?
I don't think he's ready. I don't think that that's not going to be a good enough game where Oregon State can't steal it.
Okay. I'm
when you go through their Pac-12 schedule, there's a lot of losses. There are a lot of losses, but I think that's one that you can't just chalk up as a loss.
Okay, So you think it's more likely that they beat Cal than they beat UCLA? Or you think more likely UCLA is their win as opposed to Cal?
Yeah. I have a lot of faith in Wilcox.
Okay. No faith in Chip Kelly.
No, I think Chip Kelly needs to get his guys there. There was none of his type of guys there when he took over UCLA.
Right.
That's one of the reasons why they were so bad. And so, yeah, no, he needs to get his guys. We've seen Chip run offenses that aren't like when he lost Masoli and Thomas, and you know, you had to start using more prototypical quarterbacks like he's has in UCLA, that's when his offenses didn't look great. So yeah, no, I think UCLA still has growing pains to deal with, and I think that's a winnable game.
Okay. Arizona, which I think will go to the Wildcats.
Yeah.
They play the Huskies, obviously Huskies. Arizona State, under second year under Herm Edwards, looks like they could be kind of on that uptick, you know, as far as teams that kind of came out of nowhere last year. I don't think anybody expected Arizona State to be as competitive as they actually were. And then they ended up being, you know, relatively competitive for the year. Washington State, not going to beat Mike Lynch and company. And then, Mike Leach and company definitely can beat Mike Lynch. But
so is that why Mike Lynch isn't here?
He's getting ready for the season at Washington State. And then, of course, the annual Civil War game, which I believe the Ducks will win that. So in that whole thing, I'm looking at possibly four wins.
That's an improvement.
It is an improvement. But at what point, if you're Oregon State, do you say, man, damn, these three wins, we want a bowl game? You know, I think that's the goal right now. But if you go another season with just three wins, like how hot is Jonathan Smith's seat?
I don't know if it's hot, like, because you have to give, you know, someone at least a little bit of time. But then again, we're in the society of win now. So
I think
if you don't win now, then you're gone.
And when you look around and you see the fact that Utah is projected to win the Pac-12, when you see that there are a lot of people that have a lot of faith in Wilcox and what they're doing in Cal, obviously the Huskies are the Huskies. And you know, at some point, Chris Peterson and company, they'll be back. Last year, nobody expected to see Herm Edwards and the Sun Devils be exactly where they were. There's a lot of competition in the Pac-12. I know nationally we like to think that the Pac-12 is kind of the doormat of college football, but when you look at a schedule, if you're Oregon State and you look at the schedule, man, that sucks, because most of it is, you know, these are teams that are much more competitive than you, and you're gonna be beat in most cases. So I'm gonna say that Oregon State gets three wins on the season. I'm hoping for more. Like, I would absolutely love for them to win six games and go to the bowl game. I think that would be great. Growing up here in Oregon, I can tell you this city, this state is much better when both teams are good.
Last time I went to a bowl game, 2013.
It's been a while.
So long ago.
I don't think six games is in their realm, but I think honestly, their goal should be, I think you need to make realistic goals, right? This isn't the NFL. You don't like sign a couple huge players and you go from one of the worst teams in the NFL to the best playoff teams the next year. It just, that doesn't happen in college football because you need the talent. Oregon State needs to make that goal. We need to try to get two Pac-12 wins this year.
I got a question for you guys, and we'll move on with this one. Who are the Beavers most likely to upset this season? Will it be Stanford, Utah, or the Ducks? Who's most likely to take an L for those three teams, you know, all three of which are considered teams that could win the Pac-12. Which of those three teams is Oregon State most likely to upset?
I'll go with the Stanford one because it's in Corvallis. And if they're on a two-game winning streak, they may have all the momentum going into that game.
I also want to say Stanford in Corvallis early in the season.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, once you start getting later in that season, the losses start stacking up. The wins just kind of start getting harder and harder. And guess what? Oregon has them last game of the year.
Yep.
All right, then. You heard it here first. Oregon State's going to beat Stanford. Okay, coming up next, the Ducks have a pretty important game against an old rival, or old foe, I should say. How are they going to fare in that game? We'll talk about that next. But first, Jesse at SportsCenter.
Weekend sports with a difference. This is Sports Sunday with Mike and Rashad on 1080 The Fan.
Back with the hot beats right here on 1080 The Fan. Portland sports leader. I've never actually said that. I hear it all the time. But we are indeed the sports leader. Is that still correct, Jesse? It should be.
Yeah.
I'm saying it anyway, so if even
yeah,
if
we got all them ratings.
Yeah, all of them. Boom, take that. Speaking of ratings, man, I think this is going to be a ratings monster because on August 31st at 4:30 p.m. on America's Broadcasting Channel Company. Is it channel? ABC? American Broadcasting Channel? Yes.
Well, they're owned by Disney,
I'll look it
so.
Up. Yeah. So on the Disney Channel, you'll see the Auburn Tigers visit, or not visit, well, they're playing the home team, and it's going to be Cowboy Stadium?
Yeah.
Cowboy Stadium.
Good old Jerry World.
Jerry World versus the University of Oregon. Now, the last time these two teams met, it didn't work out as well for the Ducks. Was that the last time they played? Was it the national championship game, Jesse? No, I'm sure they played after that.
Auburn and Oregon?
Yes.
No, I don't think so.
They haven't played since the national championship
game? No, it's not like we play SEC a lot.
I thought they would have played them at least once since then.
No, it's the SEC, man. They don't. Huh. They don't.
We played Tennessee.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's the one. Man, and I think you guys all know my Tennessee Volunteers story. Not a fan of the Vols. Never will be a fan of the Vols. I'm not a big fan of Rocky Top. So, but I am kind of a fan of the Ducks. Not as big as Mr. Tyler Lively, who is a U of O alumni, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, I went to the Auburn game. They have some of the nicest fans ever.
I can imagine.
Nicest fans ever. You would think they're all rude. I think that's the Bama fans.
I could see that. I could see Auburn being a little more laid back and everything. But, you know, it's Alabama. They're still going to be better than, you know, better than the Northwest as far as football is concerned. So it would make sense if they were kind of jerks, you know, during the game. I would totally understand right. that. As a fan during games, like, we don't have to be nice to each other. Like, no. I see, hey, what's up, man? Because I want to beat you. I want you to be as sad as possible after this game, especially if it's a national championship game like the Ducks played against Auburn. But we all know how that game turned out. If that is indeed the last time they played, we all know how that game turned out. Cam Newton and the Auburn Tigers end up hoisting the national championship after the game, after a really valiant effort by the Ducks. Like, you know, they put up a hell of a fight in that game. I do remember that. I do remember not being blown out by Auburn.
Lost by a field goal.
Yeah, it was a field goal. And really, that if Darren Thomas doesn't fake the handoff to LaMichael James and just gives it to him, then the Ducks may win that game. I'm pretty sure that they win that game. But they'll have an opportunity for redemption, because coming into this game, this looks a little bit different than we're used to seeing. Because on the one side, last time we talked about this, Auburn was the one with the big offensive line. Auburn was the one with the big defensive front. Like, that was the storyline going into the game. And then they had the Heisman-winning quarterback. Now you kind of flip the script a little bit, and Oregon probably doesn't have the defensive front that Auburn had, but you're looking at arguably the top one or two offensive line in the entire country, and then also arguably the best quarterback in the country. And whenever you have a great offensive line, and whenever you have the best quarterback, the chances of you winning that game are, I'm not going to say astronomical, but typically teams with the best offensive line and best quarterbacks don't lose games.
Agreed. But my question is, who is Herbert throwing to? Like, that is the question, because last year it was Dylan Mitchell all day, every day. This year, who does he throw to?
All right, hopefully somebody with hands. I'm assuming maybe his brother. He's just going to keep throwing to his brother. If he even gets on the field, because he's a freshman. But that's my big question, too, because that is, I think you see the talent on the defensive side. There's some depth issues, but I think at the starting positions, you kind of see talent across the board, and you see it at the running back position. You obviously see it at the quarterback position. You got the best line in the nation, basically. You have a huge question mark about who's catching that ball, especially based on the confidence of last year, where if you weren't throwing it to Dylan Mitchell, it was a 50-50 shot if it was going to be caught, if it was put on the money.
Right.
And that's, yeah, yeah, that's a huge question mark.
Well, the one thing you can say about whomever they're throwing the ball to is there are no shortage of big receivers for the Ducks right now.
Right.
As I look at the roster, all the men, 6'5", Brian Addison, 6'3", Kyle Buchner, 6'1", Isaiah Crocker, 6'2", Tevin Genis. Like, you're looking at guys that are going to be big targets for Justin Herbert. Now, who that game breaker is going to be, I think that's the biggest question for me. You know, if you look at the Oregon offense, going dating all the way back to the early Chip Kelly days, man, there's always been this game breaker. There's always been a guy that you can get the ball to, be it Jeff Mayo or be it DeAnthony Thomas, somebody you can get the ball to and say, go do something for me. Go make something happen. I'm curious of who that is now, because you look around and you don't see the dynamic running back that you're used to seeing. Like, while you do have good ones, you don't see anybody that's incredibly dynamic. There is no LaMichael James, you know, for your offense. You know, there is no Kenyon Barner or anything. So I'm curious to know who's going to be the guy to step forward and who's going to be the guy, because all these guys are just going to come out of the shadows, because at this point, like you said, who's he going to throw to? Nobody knows anything about anybody on this team yet.
Yeah.
Outside of what we've learned from spring ball and stuff.
But then again,
that's very little.
Just spring ball.
Yes.
I think, honestly, even though C.J. Verdell is probably going to get the starting, I think Travis Dye ends up leading the team in rushing yards. That kid's a monster, and he just doesn't stop.
No, Travis Dye came out last year and showed that he could be incredibly effective. But C.J. Verdell, you know, you got to give is he a sophomore this year, correct?
CJ, I want to say, yeah, I think everyone's a sophomore in the running back position.
He is a sophomore, you know, and mind you, CJ Verdell, if he can hold on to the ball last year, I think it was against Stanford, the fumble game, then they win that game. You know, it's just kind of one of those things. If he can just run out of bounds, which was a freshman move, which was a rookie mistake, whatever you want to call it, you know, but, you know, that happens for them, and the Ducks win 9 games. You're talking about a much different season going into this upcoming
right.
year.
I mean, he doesn't fumble. We beat Stanford, but I honestly don't think that's the end-all, be-all of that game.
No, there were some things that happened in that game, but I think that's the thing that we pointed at. That was the last thing that happened for the Ducks, so that's the one that sticks out in your memory the most. It's like if somebody, you know, caused a turnover or airballed a three-pointer, like, with a couple seconds left, they might have done everything else right during that game, but that's the mistake that we're going to talk about, because eventually, it ended up losing them the game.
Well,
right?
And I'll go back to that conversation. We had this conversation last year after the game. I put that more on the coaches than anything, because you have a young freshman player out there that, you know, all he wants to do is make the big play, because this is the biggest game he's ever been in, right?
Yeah.
And it's up to the coach to be like, to get these guys to understand where they are, and that the most important thing is you get that first down, you don't need the extra whatever, you know, just get the first down. And they didn't do that. As far as I know, they didn't do that. And that's just at that level, at the professional level, that's on the player. At this level, where kids are still learning how to be big time football players, that's a moment where the coaches need to come in, and it's a growing pain for a coach right there, because it was a young coaching staff, that you need to take these guys aside and let them and really get them to understand the moment that they're in.
So, quick question. I know we have to break because we got to get ready to go to commercial, but give me a quick score for this game, Jesse.
Quick score for which game?
Oregon versus Auburn.
Oh, God. I'm thinking this is probably going to be like I do think Oregon's going to get it. It's going to be weird. Something like 33-28.
33-28?
Yeah.
I'm going to go 27-17 Ducks.
I'm going to go 21-17 Ducks.
That's probably more realistic based on their offensive performance in the last game of the season last year. But
that was a great one.
Although it should be noted that, again, the Oregon Ducks were second in scoring in the Pac-12 last year. Second. Now, mind you, say whatever you want about Arroyo and his play calling, the Oregon Ducks, number 2 last year in scoring, in this incredibly scoring Pac-12. Okay, coming up next, man. What do you want to talk? You want to talk basketball? You want to go say football? What do you want to do?
I'm open. Let's just do this thing.
We'll figure it out when we come back from commercial. That's next on The Fan.
Weekends were made for sports. This is Sports Sunday with Mike and Rashad on 1080 The Fan.
Eminem, Till I Collapse, playing underrated. Any Eminem beats are, they're all the same. Like, if Eminem is doing production, like, they all sound just like this. The same clap, the same, you know, kind of dreary sounding beat. All Eminem's beats are always sad, you know, for whatever reason. So yeah, that's just my
some of his songs
take.
Are sad.
Most of his songs are hella sad. Like Eminem, I'm glad that he's finally getting back to rapping and getting back to, you know, doing what he's good at, because that whole emo Eminem, like, that he was going through for a while when he changed his hair back from blonde, like, it wasn't Not his best moment, but now that he's making, he has a record with Logic. I don't know if you've heard it, man. Awesome.
I haven't yet.
Absolutely. It's great. The video is pretty cool, too. All right, man. We've been doing these division previews. Season starts in about 4 weeks, right around there. We are officially in week one of the preseason.
Yeah, they just finished
week one of the preseason, yeah. So moving on to week two. Couple high points for a lot of teams. I think people were impressed with what they saw from Kyler Murray for a bit. I think people were impressed with what they saw from the Browns. I think, obviously, man, people like what the Seahawks were able to do this past weekend. But it's all preseason. And
it's all preseason.
You never know. Like, the Patriots went 0-4 in a couple of preseasons and then end up winning the Super Bowl. So let you know the preseason is just – it's a nice tuning event for guys who, you know, want to – get ready for the season, and it's really for the guys who are trying to make a roster.
And likewise, the Cleveland Browns have won the preseason many times.
A few times, 4-0.
Yeah.
4-0. So let's just keep that in mind. But speaking of the Cleveland Browns, we're going to go ahead and do the AFC North, and we might as well do NFC North. We can try to squeeze them both into this segment. We're going to start with the North because I believe that's the most interesting division of the two. The reason it's so interesting, and we'll just go ahead and start with them, is the Cleveland Browns. All of a sudden, they are football's darlings. Everybody wants to see the Browns play. Everybody wants a Baker Mayfield or Odell Beckham Jr. jersey. Everybody's on the bandwagon. Do you think we're jumping the gun a little bit? I personally think that the Cleveland Browns, it's justified. They've had enough number one picks, and they've been able to build their defense and been able to build their line and been able to do some of the things they've been able to do. I think this is finally the year that the Cleveland Browns take that step forward and make the playoffs and possibly even try to make a playoff run. I don't know if they'll make a run, but making the playoffs this year is, I think, something that's definitely in the wheelhouse for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I definitely agree, especially when you have a Baker Mayfield as your quarterback. That dude's exciting, and he makes people want to watch. Unless you're Colin Cowherd, then you don't want to watch him.
No, yeah, but Baker, you can't lie, man. There's something about Baker Mayfield that he's just – interesting. He's kind of a bit of a jerk, but a jerk that you kind of want to hang out with and pick his brain and see what he's thinking about just a little bit, man. So, I mean, I don't know. I kind of like the swag of Baker Mayfield. You know, he doesn't care. He doesn't really, you know, he is who he is, and you can accept it or not. And it seems like his teammates are really feeding off of that. Well, one of which is, we mentioned him here a bit ago, man, Odell Beckham Jr. Your offense changes a lot when you add, in my opinion, the best receiver in football. I know everybody wants to give DeAndre Hopkins that title, and I mean, that'd be a really tough argument to say that he doesn't deserve the title of the best wide receiver, especially if you look at the hodgepodge of quarterbacks that he's had up until Deshaun Watson. Yeah, he's been awesome, but Odell Beckham Jr. has played with Eli Manning for the past 4 years of his career. A team that's not going to move the ball, the team that Eli Manning can't throw the ball from me to you. And Odell Beckham continues to make plays and continues to wow and everything. So I think he's a guy that if you inject him and his dancing and his personality and his everything into this Cleveland, more than their offense, but into this Cleveland culture, I think the Browns are set up to do something special over the next few years.
I think the talent's there, but I think the word that you just used is what I'm most worried about, and that's the culture within Cleveland. You have a guy in Freddie Kitchens who has never been there. He's never done that before, and he's got some of the biggest personalities, most charismatic personalities in the league on his roster, and he's got to find a way to not just come up with a winning game plan from week to week to week. He's got to find a way to manage those egos. And beyond that, it's not just Odell Beckham. You got to figure out, okay, how am I going to get Nick Chubb the ball? How am I going to get David Njoku the ball? How am I going to get Jarvis Landry the ball? And, just keep on going. Odell Beckham, they have a lot of talent.
They have a lot of weapons.
And when one of those mouths stops getting fed, it starts really getting loud.
So I guess the thing that the kind of, I'm not going to say it doesn't really concern me in that instance, is because who is Odell Beckham Jr.'s, I don't call him best friend, but incredibly close friend? Jarvis Landry, somebody who he played in college with. And if you remember in college, Jarvis was the possession guy. Get the ball to Jarvis. He's going to make sure Odell was the exciting, he's going to get you a touchdown. You throw it deep, man, he's got you from there. So that was kind of expect to see Jarvis get a lot of looks just because he's been in the offense. He knows where to be. He knows exactly what he's supposed to do. He has a rapport already. So I do expect there to be maybe a learning curve at first, because when you have a player like Odell Beckham, when you have a player like Julio Jones, when you got somebody like Antonio Brown, you want the ball in their hands. Like you try your hardest if you're a quarterback to put the ball in their hands, because you know how exciting they will be once they get it. I just think at this point, for a young Baker Mayfield, he just has to figure out how to divvy it up. Talk to Peyton Manning. Talk to some of these guys that, man, made a career of making sure everybody on his team eats, making sure everybody on his team gets an opportunity. Remember, Peyton Manning also came into the league, a few years into the league, and he had a bevy of great weapons. The Edgerrin James and the Marvin Harrisons. And who was the other receiver on the other side of Marvin Harrison? Reggie Wayne. A list of guys that are just awesome. But Peyton made it, man. You're going to go to the Pro Bowl. And you're going to go
Peyton
to the Pro Bowl.
Peyton also elevated a lot of the players around him. Pierre Garçon was never the same player after he left Peyton Manning. Brandon Stokely was a great player with Peyton Manning, really kind of an average slot receiver after that. He did a great job of elevating all of the guys around him. Adai was a great running back with Peyton Manning. Mm-hmm. And that's the special thing. Now, not to say that I'm one of the biggest Baker Mayfield fans that you'll meet, as far as I think the guy's a winner. And that's one of those intangibles that you can't quantify and put on a stat sheet, is does this guy just flat out win? And that's one of the things he does. At the same time, he's young. He's got an ego. He's still learning how to navigate being a leader within the NFL amongst a bunch of professionals that have been there, done that. And then at the same time, you have all the other intangibles of a young coaching staff that it doesn't sound like necessarily they're all eye to eye on the way that they see how to do things, especially the more of these assistants that come out and say, hey, this is how it really was last year. There are a lot of question marks in Cleveland. The talent, not a question mark. There is undoubtedly a bevy of talent.
If you're questioning that, then you clearly don't watch football. But the only other team I want to talk about in this specific division is the only one that deserves us to talk about them, and that's the Pittsburgh Steelers. Last year, Ben Roethlisberger statistically had the best year of his career. If you look at the numbers, he threw more touchdowns than he's ever thrown. He's thrown more yards than he's ever thrown. Didn't make it to the playoffs, but statistically, Big Ben has never been better in his career than he was last year.
Right.
That being said, you lose a player like Antonio Brown. You lose a Le'Veon Bell for sure this time. I'm not sure we've all known all the problems that have been going on with Pittsburgh for the past few years, just really kind of more than anything an undisciplined team. Honestly, I don't know if we've seen – I think we might have seen the best of Mike Tom this – version of Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers. I honestly think moving forward, this will be the Cleveland Browns division to hang on to, unless they do something really stupid.
I mean, could they, the Steelers that is, could they end up running almost like how the Patriots did years ago, where it was a tight end heavy, we're just going to use multiple running backs? I mean, they do, now granted, James Conner's on the team, so it's a little different. But if you run it like that, you have a chance to win that division.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you the Steelers still have a solid chance to win. The defense is solid. It's a top 15 defense. You still have Ben Roethlisberger, who's still a top 10. I'm not going to put him in the top 5, but he's a top 10 quarterback. You still got a guy in Juju Smith-Schuster. Guess what? He caught more balls than Antonio Brown did last year. He had more receiving yards than Antonio Brown did last year. So you have a guy there. You have a guy in James Conner. Then you got a really like Jalen Samuels, who's great at catching the ball out of the backfield as well. So that you might start seeing things like, well, we're going to throw Vance McDonald out there. We're going to have Samuels and Conner out there at the same time and start being a little bit more creative with their formations, since that wide receiving position is a little bit thinner. But James Washington's supposed to take that step in his second year and didn't have a lot of opportunity last year. Honestly, it's the consistency of the culture of the Steelers. They've been a winning culture for a very long time, and that's just something that's very hard to establish in the NFL. And when you look at the rest of the league, I mean, I honestly, it's still hard for me to put Cleveland over Baltimore for that same reason. Baltimore's a winning culture. I don't know how they do it every year, because honestly, I look at that roster and I go, man, I mean, I don't see it, but they make it happen every year. You got the coach, you got the culture, and they make it happen. And honestly, Harbaugh, he changes things up.
He's a great coach.
Yep.
And then there's the NFC North, which you've got a bunch of teams there that I think people are interested in, but not really. It's the Bears and Mitch Trubisky, and it's the Lions, Matt Stafford, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, and Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, Kirk
and Cousins. Minnesota. So let's just go ahead on three, and all of us just collectively say who's going to win the NFC North. 1, 2, 3, Bears.
Packers.
Jesse, you didn't do it. Let's try again.
All right.
1, 2, 3, Bears. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm different.
Yeah, I know you are. Yeah. No, I. Yeah.
Yeah. So different. You said Packers as well? Yeah.
No, I said Bears.
You said Bears.
Yeah,
I'm
the odd one out here.
I said Bears as well. I think Chicago just, they've got more. The last year that was the step forward they needed. If Mitchell, can decide to take that next step forward as a quarterback, I think the Bears are going to be a tough out for anybody.
Don't undersell Minnesota, though. There's still a ton of talent in Minnesota.
And you love Kirkers.
You have Kirk Cousins, who, the reason I leave them out of that is he has yet to prove he can win a big game, but he has probably the top tandem of wide receivers in that division. You have a top-tier running back, if he can stay healthy, and Cook. Rudolph's there. They just extended him in the offseason. There's a lot to like there. I think the defense is not bad. I mean, I don't think it's a top-tier defense, but it's not bad. So I think that's another team that could jump up and surprise people. But I Chicago, despite the fact losing Fangio on defense, and, you know, I think that team is – it's young, it's hungry, and it – and it's ready to win right now.
Well, there you go. That's your NFC North and AFC North division-ish for the upcoming year. Okay, coming up next, who are the most talented athletes? We always get into the best rapper, best rapping basketball player, football player, whatever. I want to know, who are the most talented athletes out there? Dame Dalla just dropped the album, which everybody seems to love, including me. We're going to talk about that next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.